Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the SCCE and HCCA. Joining me today from Santa Monica, California is Scott Eblen. Scott is the author of the books Overworked and Overwhelmed and The Next Level, What Insiders Know About Executive Success. Scott will be a keynote speaker at the 2018 Compliance and Ethics Institute, which will be taking place in Las Vegas from October 21st through 24th. Scott, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Oh, great pleasure, Adam. Thanks.
So I want to talk to you to start today about presence. When you talk about presence in your book, or when you talk about it in three ways: personal presence, team presence, and organizational presence. It's an interesting concept. Could we start with personal presence? What does that mean?
Sure. And I guess what I'd say before I even get to what it means is like those three buckets of behaviors, really, like personal presence, team, and organizational presence, for me, roll up to like overall leadership presence. And so, you know, what is expected of a leader and what kind of behaviors do you either need to pick up or let go of, you know, to get the results that you need to get, you know, whatever leadership role that you're in. And so personal presence for me is about managing yourself, which I think is probably like the foundation for everything else. If you're not managing yourself effectively, then pretty much nothing else works.
And then so team presence by extension is really how you manage the team?
Yeah, so team presence, I usually say it's like, how do you leverage your team? Because a lot of leaders get to where they are because they have a reputation of being the go-to person. And, you know, that's a great thing to be. I always say until it's no longer a great thing to be. And it's no longer a great thing to be when the scope gets to be too big. And so you have to pick up team reliance and let go of self-reliance. And that really means that you have to work through and with your team to get bigger things done than you can do on your own.
So then what would be organizational presence?
So organizational presence, the way I think about that is it's about how do you engage your colleagues. And so it's in a way it's similar to the team presence piece because that's about leveraging your team to get bigger things done. But there are even bigger things that you have to do as a leader quite often that extend beyond the scope of your own team, right? So there's a lot of collaborative opportunities that you need to pursue with your colleagues, that's engaging them in that way. Quite often there are disputes or conflicts that you need to work through together in a productive and, you know, sustainable kind of way. You know, one of the things I talk about in The Next Level is pick up an outside in view of the entire enterprise and let go of an inside out view that starts with your functional perspective. And that, again, is about how do you engage your colleagues or even engage colleagues outside of your organization to bring in, you know, fresh perspective that can help you and everybody else in your organization do things better and better over time.
Yeah, I think that one personally for me resonates a lot just because the job of a compliance officer, you know, especially senior one, obviously is to manage, is having presence for themselves and their team. But ultimately, the job is about influencing others in the organization to do what they're mm-hmm. supposed to do from a compliance perspective, which is often not easy to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, and you used a key word there, which is influence, right? And in my experience, I work in a lot of different industries as a coach and leadership teacher, I guess, is for lack of a better word. A lot of different industries, a lot of different companies, and it's not just compliant in a lot of different functions. And it's not just compliance people that have to influence. I think even, you know, executives in line functions, you know, that have direct accountability for profit and loss, you know, it's usually more about influence than it is authority because, mm-hmm. you know, lots of people have authority in their own domain. But again, by itself, that's usually not enough. You have to influence colleagues if you really want to get bigger results.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you created a concept that you call the life GPS, which I think mm-hmm. is a really intriguing notion. Can you take us through what the idea is? I realize going through the whole thing would be much longer than podcast, but can you give an overview?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. I can do it in podcast length, I think. So this really comes back to managing yourself, you know, that personal presence. And One of the things I like to say is that if you're a leader, you control the weather. Like if you have a designated leadership title, however you show up is completely predictive of how the people around you are going to show up. So it's really important that you manage yourself effectively and do what you can to show up at your best. And so that's really what the Life GPS is about. It's a framework, and really in the end, it's a one pager. It's a one page worksheet that encourages the leader to ask and answer three questions for themselves. The first question is, how am I at my best? Like, what are the words or short phrases that describe me when I'm really in peak performance mode? And I have different ways to help people uncover or discover what that looks like for them. And then the second big question is, so what are the routines that I either have in my life or need to incorporate into my life that would make it more likely that I would show up at my best? And those routines come in four domains, physical, mental, relational, and spiritual. And what I try to help clients do in that kind of work and identifying routines is I share with them a lot of research that I've gathered, and most of it's not original. It's from people who are spending their lives looking at human performance in kind of a physiological and a neurological kind of way. And I'm sharing with my clients, what the best practices are, in those spaces, physical, mental, relational, and spiritual, so that, they can choose what works for them to help them show up at their best. And then the third and last big question in the Life GPS is, so if you are performing and leading and living at your best, what outcomes would you hope or expect to see in the three big arenas of life? Your life at home, your life at work, and your life in your broader community. There's a quote from Gandhi that I like a lot that, with regard to every action, one must know the result that is expected to follow. And it's really just, tuning into the cause and effect. If I behave in a particular way, and hopefully something that looks like behaving as I would if I was operating at my best, well, then what would I, what would the result that I would expect to follow from that be? And it's not like specific, and it's like, if it doesn't happen exactly this way, I'm disappointed, but it's more notional and kind of directional in terms of, happy, healthy family or, great results at work or, making an impact in my hometown or whatever it is. So, it's just helping people think through, why are you here? What are you here to do, and how do your behaviors support those objectives or those intentions?
I think one of the things that's interesting, I mean, you talk about it being directional. In some ways, it's also omnidirectional, because I think a lot of times we think, okay, this is what I want, but this GPS notion says, you know what, you got to first look, even before you look at where you want to go, to look at where do you have to have been before you even show up to get started.
I like the way you frame that. That's a really, I haven't thought about it that way before, but I think that's really on point. It's like I said a minute ago, it's cause and effect, or, in Gandhi's tradition, it's known as karma, or in computer programming, it's garbage in, garbage out, it's like, or it's good stuff in, good stuff out, right? And so if I can really tune into how I've been over the years and how I am right now when I'm really operating at my best, and I have routines that reinforce that, which is the second part of the Life GPS, then almost logically follows that you should expect pretty good outcomes. There's a lot of stuff that's not in your control, but I guess what this is focusing on is the stuff that is within your control, and you how do you react or respond to, externalities that usually are out of your control, but what you can control are the internalities, and just anticipating, what your triggers are, either positive or negative, and when they're negative, recognizing that you've had a negative trigger, and then making an aware and intentional choice to go in a different direction than what your, reflexive reaction might be.
In some ways, as you're talking about this, it reminds me of something Nassim Taleb wrote. He's the man, who came up with the whole concept of the black swan. Is he makes the argument that we can't control risks, but we can control how we handle them and what we do about them.
Yeah, that's true.
and our most importantly, our response to them. And I think that's there. Now, one of the things that I think comes out of these ideas that you've expressed is that, you know, you've got to take care of yourself before you can take care of what you need to from a work perspective. And you're a strong advocate for mindfulness. You know, how can that help someone who's in compliance? I mean, it's gotten to be quite the popular concept. You know, I was just in a bookstore and couldn't believe the number of magazines and other stuff on it. How do you feel that that can help someone, you know, in the business world and specifically a compliance person?
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty simple. I mean, there's a, like you said, there's a lot of buzz, you know, around mindfulness these days. And there, you know, like you said, there's literally a magazine called Mindfulness and, you know, a whole section in Barnes and Noble or on Amazon or whatever on mindfulness books. And, you know, there's a lot of tradition, you know, thousands of years of tradition behind that. And, you know, starting with Buddhism and, you know, the people like Jack Kornfield and Jon Kabat-Zinn and others, you know, brought a lot of that to the West in the 1970s-ish period. And it's, you know, it's really good. But for me, what I'm trying to do is boil stuff down to its simplest essence. And for me, mindfulness really comes down to two things. And I mentioned briefly a minute ago, awareness is the first thing and intention is the other. And so awareness, I think, is awareness of what's going on around me first. And, you know, again, what my triggers are and just kind of what the environmental, you know, factors are in my life. And then the other part of awareness is awareness of what's going on inside of me, usually in reaction or response to what's going on around me, you know, physical, mental, emotional reactions or responses to the external environment. So I try to develop a high degree of awareness, you know, about the environmental factors and my response to them, or trying to choose my response whenever I can, or work with my clients to do that. And then the other part of mindfulness for me after awareness is intention, you know, so like once I'm aware, I can then be intentional about what I'm going to do next, or quite often, more importantly, what I'm not going to do next, right? So awareness and intention for me is my really simple working definition of mindfulness. Of course, there are lots of practices and routines and things that you can engage in that, you know, can help you be more of both of those, more aware and intentional. And I think people have to choose the practices that work best for them, you know, to show up that way.
Yeah, and it's definitely, you know, from all that I've read and seen and tried, it's something that does take practice. Well, Scott, thank you for both an informative and an intriguing conversation today. I very much look forward to having you join us with the Compliance and Ethics Institute. I want to thank you again. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today and encourage you to learn more at complianceethicsinstitute.org. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspectives.